But I'm not impressed by your performance.
But you seem like ready to bury Bjorn Revenue.
I personally think he's a bitch. If I had a chance to see him, I'd put them hands on him.
So 9 weeks away from my family, I think I profited $400 or $500. So that worked out pretty good for me. It makes me want to quit. Go get a job at Starbucks or something.
Conor McGregor, who is also, of course, the UFC lightweight champion, will relinquish his 145-pound title.
You can't have all the best guys in the world beating the living shit out of each other every day. You can't do it.
Hello?
Hello? Oh, I hear you!
I'm on the headset. I switched over.
Oh. Wonder what's wrong.
I have no idea. I don't know. It was showing up like it was working. I would do a test. I could hear myself. I could hear myself in the headphones. It was like a real thing I had going here. But now, for whatever reason, Skype doesn't like it. I don't know.
What kind of microphone is it? A USB mic?
Yeah. I just had it plugged into my laptop. Like, essentially, I do with the headset right now. But whatever. I'll try it another time.
So anyways, everybody, a cold open is a good open to show. It's not actually technically a cold open because you hear music, but welcome to the show. I'm Mike Coughlin. That's Matt Grady. You know how this deal works by now, and if you don't, you'll figure it out because we're not that smart. We're that complicated. I have Demetrius Johnson versus John Dodson on the background. I got my dumbass dogs in from the fucking cold by bribing them, and now I turn the show over to Matt to carry it.
What's the weather like in Chicago right now?
You're the second person to ask me that in the past 24 hours. My mom asked me that.
Well, you kind of mentioned it because you said the dogs were out in the cold.
Oh, yeah. It's basically at night we're getting down to the low 30s. During the day we're getting up to the low 50s.
Okay.
And it sucks because I've been going downtown to the city a lot for work, and I have like a mile walk, and so like – it's cold enough that I need a jacket, but after a mile of walking, like, I'm kind of sweating a little bit because I have enough layers on. So, yeah, fuck Chicago weather.
Sounds good. It's been raining here a lot. Not that you asked.
How is the weather there? It's almost December.
It's we usually term this weather here raw, like it's rainy and like 40s, like just gross. You know?
Huh.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll do the usual.
Does it fill that big hole?
Fill that big hole.
The big hole in Boston.
The big dig?
Yeah. I just assume there's this massive 2 mile deep canyon in the middle of Boston.
No, that was done years ago. They finished that. Like the tunnel, a tile fell from the roof of the tunnel and killed a woman. So that was good.
Why
it was literally a few months after they finished it too. This huge ass tile fell on her car and she died. Yeah.
Why did they build it? What was it for?
I don't know. Just the east traffic. Driving into Boston was a mess. Boston's not like a well-designed city. New York City, 37th and whatever, wherever you are, you can kind of know where you're going. There's no numbers to any of the roads in Boston, and there are a lot of one-ways and curves, and it's a tough city to get around in general. And then just the traffic from the suburbs going into the city was bad. So the idea was they were going to kind of build a bigger, better tunnel underneath the city to alleviate some of the traffic.
Oh, that's what it's for. I thought it's just a traffic thing. I thought there was some like grand design for like, I don't know, to like reverse a river or something. I could never understand why it took so long.
Because it's, I don't know, a government project maybe.
Not in Trump's America, everybody. Hey, I see myself on TV.
I'm not even going to ask what you're watching. I can only imagine.
Dodson and Mighty Mouse. They fought here in the United States.
I thought maybe you were in some other sort of film.
Don't go on the TV.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Sometimes you can.
I don't airplay everything.
Okay, that was the word. I couldn't think of airplay. Anyway. We'll do the usual drill. We'll go back in time, we'll talk current events, and then we'll talk the future. We're going to move through this last UFC show this past weekend very quickly if we can help it, because there's bigger and more important news to talk about. So on Saturday night, November 26th, we had UFC Fight Night This was number 101, Whitaker versus Brunson from Melbourne, Australia at the Rod Laver Arena, one of your least favorite arenas in the world. This wasn't a particularly strong or newsworthy card at all. So I was thinking I'd ask you the four questions about this show again.
Why do I not like the arena? Did I mention something? Because
you don't like tennis or something, and it's lame. They named it after a tennis player.
Huh, that does sound like something I would say.
You did say that yesterday, and I said it all. I also said it hurt my feelings because I used to play tennis. Anyway, I'm still kind of hurt by it. So this wasn't a big card by any stretch. It obviously lost that main event with, Rockhold and Jacare. So I was going to ask, what was your overall impression of the card?
Yeah, it started out fine. I was kind of enjoying it. Hit a big lull for a while where I just like regretted watching the show.
Yeah, a lot of decisions in a row early. Yeah.
And then it ended fine with the big knockout. But, I mean, whatever. It just barely qualifies as a fight night. This is like, seriously, this, was it? This is on free TV. I mean, the fucking Sioux Falls, South Dakota had a better main event.
Right.
And that's what this should be. This should be in Omaha. Like, this is what you do when you take the UFC to a city. And, like, people are just like, I'm going to get to see the UFC. And they don't give a shit who's in the main event. And then they're like, Rod Whitaker? Who the fuck is that? And then everybody can, like, pretend like, yeah, they like it. And they're in Australia. They're like, oh, yeah, it's one of our own. It's like, yeah, that's really not one of your own. Like, you guys don't really give a shit. It would kind of be like Ross Pearson headlining in England and everybody pretending, yeah, this is a really good main event.
Right. I get it. Best fight on the card, you think?
The main event, I guess.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I like the Dan Kelly fight, too, even though it was against Chris Camozzi, who isn't always my favorite fighter. But that fight, Kelly was bleeding everywhere. He came back and he won it, and you felt like he was old and smaller and slower, but he just hung in there and gritted it out and won the decision. Like, I liked that fight because of the storyline of the old 39-year-old man. I could relate.
That's a common theme in Australia. They have a lot of fighters that are basically just old, and they put them on the card because they're Australians or New Zealand.
Yeah, like Anthony Perroche.
Yeah, Anthony Perroche, Mark Hunt. Oh, the Hunt's obviously great in his way. But, yeah, it's like, I don't know. I mean, they call Kelly like an Olympian, and I know he was. But it's like, it's in judo, and you're from a non-judo country. So, right. Like, it's like being, like, if I was an Olympian in judo in America, it's not really the same as being a real judo Olympian if you're from Japan. Much in the same way that I would imagine, you know, like, it's like saying, like, the guys on the Jamaican bobsled team were, like, Olympic bobsledders. Like, well, yeah, but you're the only ones in your country that did it. You didn't have any competition. I just ripped the Jamaican bobsled team for some reason. So,
I was thinking, like, the U.S., like, women's ping pong player. Anybody? Something like that.
Well,
it's
actually,
a lower level of competition.
Except for, I think the U.S. men's and women's ping pong players are both of Chinese descent. May even be immigrants. So, yeah, China runs that sport. They can have it.
Most impressive performance on the card?
Whitaker, I guess. Again, I keep going back to the main event. Nobody else really jumped out at me.
Sure.
What's his face? Jake Matthews looked... Nah.
He lost, technically.
Whitaker, again, he had all this pressure on him, and he came through and dominated, and, you know, he did what he's supposed to do. Sometimes that's just enough.
Brunson was, like, out of control in that fight. That's the one thing I remember, like, vividly. Like, he was chasing after Whitaker and, like, flailing around the cage like you don't see very often. And I don't know if he got rocked early and he was a little bit out of it, but he was, like, stumbling around, like, chasing him, throwing these, like, wild, wide punches. It was kind of out of character for him.
Yeah, it really seemed very amateurish. And, like, it's the kind of thing you only usually see in main events of UFCs, and this isn't really a real main event, but nonetheless, when guys are going for a finish and they kind of lose control, So, like, I thought maybe he thought he had him hurt or whatever, but in no way am I, you know, Brunson's a pretty decent fighter, and he's a very athletic guy, code word. And it just kind of, yeah, it did seem out of character. Again, he may have been hurt going into the fight. Maybe he just thought, I only have one shot. Perhaps he's just trying to get all the fights out of the way so he can get a new contract. that's what everybody's doing these days.
Could be. Most disappointing fighter? Anybody, like, totally shit the bed, you think?
If they did it, nothing registers offhand. Okay. Jake Matthews, just because he lost and people were hyping him. But, I mean, again, this is a card full of fight pass undercard openers, basically.
Right. Okay. You know, we can move along if
yeah,
you're
yeah,
good.
Yeah, please, please move on.
All right. So also on the show, some relatively big news was announced, not related to that night, but John Anik announced that Daniel Cormier is now injured and out of his UFC 206 main event with Anthony Johnson. So my first question is, this always gets the AKA, every guy gets injured in this camp talk going again, which this did. So you've got obviously Kane, who's hurt a lot, trains out at AKA. Luke Rockhold, who just pulled out with an injury, trains at AKA. Khabib, who's fought like three times in the last 4 years, trains at AKA. Seemingly they have a lot of injuries. Do you think AKA is at fault here? Is this random? Is it something they're doing? I know in the past Dana White's called them the Stone Ages of training and camps and that sort of thing. Any thoughts as far as that goes? Is that misguided, that rep they have?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny because I used to always think in terms of the UFC being like Dana White and it's just his personality. But with the new owners, I do have this feeling like it's just not quite the same. Like Dana doesn't get as angry about these things. I think it's because like it's a job for him more than like just hanging out with his best friends doing shit. But if I'm Dana or WMEI, which whatever it is, like the radio, it sounds like a radio station. I'd be really, really fucking pissed at Javier Mendez because you guys just cost UFC two very high-profile main events in the span, and they both were to take place within about, like, 2 weeks of each other. Like,
right.
It's kind of a six of one, half dozen the other. Like, Khabib, you could probably blame on AKA a little bit. But some of the other guys, like, I think I've probably said in the past, I know I've said it to somebody, because I have one thought and just repeat it. Velasquez, he can't be good if he doesn't train that way. That's just who he is. Like, the reason he's such a great fighter is because he trains like a madman and he's just can outwork everyone. If he slowed it up, I don't know if he'd be able to do that. Daniel Cormier, you know, the guy is an Olympian. He's trained hard his whole life. Rockhold, I think there's kind of a combination of they train too hard, but also these guys are all older. Like, this isn't a gym full of 20-year-olds getting injured. Cormier's in his mid to late 30s. So Velasquez is over 30. Rockhold's in his mid 30s. These are guys that they probably do need to learn to train differently because you can't train like a 20-year-old when you're 37.
Right. I mean, the one argument against that was this has been going on for 5 years. I mean, Kane's, you know what I mean? Even when they were 5 years ago, this isn't a rep that just happened this week. This has been an ongoing thing in MMA circles for half a decade at this point.
And it's fair. I mean, again, you look at the rep and once things happen a number of times at a gym, it could be a coincidence, but look at it this way. You don't see Greg Jackson's camp seeming to have this many high-profile problems. You don't see the Duke Rufus. But if you look at, like, American Top Team, they have all kinds of problems. They had, like, five or six drug cheats all within a month. And as soon as that happened, I thought, no, they're a dirty gym. Like, this isn't a coincidence. These guys are dirty, and they're all in it together. AKA, I think just having so many of those guys who are just they come from that high level wrestling background and that's just how they are and they just grind and they embrace the grind as the amateur wrestling community likes to say. And you know, again, it's what got them to the dance and maybe they don't know how to change it up. But you know what? I thought Mighty Mouse, I thought he had the greatest training style in the world. He never seemed to get injured. He got injured. So, I mean, it doesn't excuse AKA. I do think that they probably should change. But again, I'm not in the room. I don't know what's happening with the guys. I don't think that they're shoot box level bad. Back in the day when those guys were just having actual fights every day, getting knocked out and still training. Like, that's fucking dangerous.
Right.
But the one thing I can say about AKA that seems to stand out is, I know Velasquez had the shoulder injury, but for the most part, they do seem to have a lot of lower body injuries.
Like knee stuff.
Hamstrings and knees. And those are wrestling injuries. Almost always, like any injury I've ever had to my knees or hips or hamstrings or anything like that, always comes from wrestling. That's the nature of wrestling, and especially MMA wrestling, because you fight in a different way. Like in amateur wrestling, you stop fighting a takedown at a certain point because you know you've lost that takedown and you don't want to give up the 3 or the full 5 points or whatever for a score. So you will purposely go to your knees, give up the 2 points and move on. Whereas in MMA, you can sprawl a little bit longer. And I think part of the sprawling longer torques on your limbs and your joints a little bit longer as well. And, you know, combine that with these guys, again, have all been pretty much wrestling at the highest level possible for decades. It's probably a reason that you don't see a lot of really old high-level freestyle wrestlers or folk-style wrestlers. I mean, Yoel Romero, I guess, but he's a cheater. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, whatever it is, if you're AKA, I mean, Dana White can say all he wants, but they're really the people that should want to get this shit straightened out because they're losing out on. I mean, Velasquez has lost millions of dollars. I bet he's lost $5 million in his career.
Easy.
And he's never going to get it back. This isn't like, oh, he'll just make up those fights later. Like, no, like, this is the time, strike while the iron's hot, and you're creating that impression with the UFC where if I'm the UFC, like, I'd be nervous to book the guy in a main event. Like, shit, can you imagine if you had a double main event of John Jones and Cain Velasquez? You'd be guaranteed that neither one of them would happen. It would just be, you'd be tempting fate. And I see Chuck Liddell talking to Holly Holm. That's weird. So, yeah. And there's John Hamm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me is there's something going on. There seems to be a pattern. Like, that much is obvious. But the reason why, we don't really know for sure. You know, is it just bad luck? Is it those 4 or 5 guys we talk about are just more injury prone guys to begin with? Would Cain be getting hurt at Jackson's and Rockhold would be getting hurt, at ATT, wherever? It's hard to say because there's really no data on it really. You know, it's all pretty much conjecture and guessing. So it was just interesting because that story is ongoing and seems to constantly come up. Right after Anik mentioned that Cormier was injured and
breaking news. I just got a Twitter update saying Coach Edmund, Ariel, and 3 others just followed at the MMAAA. So they've got a Twitter account.
I can't believe I okay. I should have come up on that. I followed them also.
Anik, you were saying.
Yeah, Anik was talking, Cormier's out, so they need a new main event for UFC 206. The new main event will be the former semi-main event of Anthony Pettis versus Max Holloway with one catch. This bout will now be for the interim featherweight title. It was also announced that Conor McGregor had relinquished, I put that in quotes possibly, relinquished his undisputed featherweight title. And now Jose Aldo is being bumped up from interim featherweight champion to the real featherweight champion. Does this make any sense to you?
No, this is one of the dumbest fucking things they've ever done. Like, the UFC has always been very good with their titles. They've created interim champions in the past, but usually there was a logic behind it. It was always because a champion was scheduled to fight and got injured. Now, he may have got injured 3 or 4 weeks in advance and they didn't have to do this necessarily, but like, you know, when Jones fought OSP for the interim championship. It was supposed to be Cormier. Cormier got injured. Fine. They did the same, you know, they did that when McGregor beat Chad Mendez. Supposed to be for the title. Aldo gets injured. Fine. You created an interim champion. At least it was supposed to be a championship fight. They have now just, for the, this, I've never seen it where in one night they've given one guy a title and then told two other guys, you also get a chance to fight for the same title. And then you'll fight again, somebody else, for the unification of what are basically two secondary titles. Because it has still not been an entire year since Conor won the flyweight, I'm sorry, the featherweight championship. He's, like, Jose Aldo, all kinds of guys had layoffs way longer than 11 months. And I know Conor's not going to, his next fight's obviously not going to be at 45, but does it matter if Conor drops to 145? He's fighting for the title. And if he's in the title fight, and he held the title before, and he never lost the title, what, there's no actual difference. Because if he wins, he's champion, and if he loses, he would have lost it either way. So, I mean, for them to do this for, which is obviously a purely for a marketing standpoint, this is really bad. The UFC's never done this shit. Like, they've always been very good at protecting their championships. I mean, fucking A, you look at UFC 200, they had Brock fucking Lesnar coming back, and they didn't put him in the main event, because they, and then they didn't put Aldo and Edgar in the main event for that interim championship. Instead, they put Miesha Tate in the main event against Amanda Nunes, because that was a legitimate world championship. So they've always, you know, which, it was clearly the third or fourth weakest fight on that card. But they, again, they've been good at doing these things, and it just undermines all of that. Is and unfortunately for the UFC, and I don't think it's fair, but there's some degree of new owners come in and weird things happen, and everybody's going to be, I think, be looking for ways to look at new owners. Be like, are they trying to maximize their revenue? Like, as opposed to, you know, Dana and the Fertittas, who just never did, I guess. But, but you know what? I think that it is kind of a very unique situation, because the UFC, for most modern fan, has been profitable for, I mean, it's been profitable for over a decade now.
Right.
The UFC is not profitable right now. Like, it is year to year, but those owners still have debt to make up.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes them, obviously, we've seen all kinds of changes. The fighters aren't apparently getting complimentary fight tickets to shows, even though sure. They're like, I didn't get a free ticket to UFC 205. Well, yeah, okay. But, you know, there's, it seems like there's little things. We've talked in the past about them closing down different places. They have to cut costs. And, again, it's a natural part of all businesses. They come in. Dana ran it like a family business. Obviously, WMEI 89.7 FM is going to run it a little differently. But that, still, it's that, the optics of it, which probably don't actually matter. They only matter to people like us, and we don't matter in the world. I wish we
right.
did, but, you know, what really matters is essentially Ronda Rousey fighting and bringing in that female demographic, and Conor McGregor fighting, bringing in everybody demographic, and then if the UFC's lucky, John Jones will stop fucking up his life.
So from a, the UFC's perspective, why make the Holloway Pettis fight for the interim title? You think they think it'll help the buy rate for UFC 206? Are more people going to buy that show if an interim featherweight championship is on the line? Or do you think they have concerns that Aldo's not going to come back? I mean, do you think either of those play a part?
I think that it's all, I think it's purely, they've already canceled one pay-per-view this year.
Right.
And I thought they were going to, they would have done that with this and just bump this down to a fight night, which, and it would be a really, really good entertaining fight night. Like, okay, yeah, that'd be good. But, I mean, think of it this way. Like, I think Aldo, Holloway and Pettis are amazing. I think the fight's going to be very good. The winner clearly is the number one contender for Jose Aldo. But if this was, like, the main event on a big Fox show, I would be like, eh, it's kind of a little, it's not as special. It's not quite got that marquee value. And now they can say it's a title fight. And then maybe that helps a little bit for people not paying attention. Cause maybe your average fan, if they just hear Conor McGregor's been stripped and these two will fight for the interim championship, they'll just think, like, interim just means, like, vacant, and they're not really thinking it all through. And then, you know, in 4 months or 5 months when they fight Aldo, like, oh, whatever, it's for a title. I just think they didn't want to cancel a pay-per-view, and they felt they had to justify the main event of the show, and you know, they could obviously make it five rounds. I don't think either guy has a big problem with that. So they throw a fake tin can on there, and they further move towards boxing, which, you know, maybe this past year has been their weird transition, even though it's been as big as ever. The one thing that really to take away is that Conor McGregor, in a weird way, has made titles less relevant than ever before, because none of his fights, the titles kind of mattered. It mattered a little bit with Alvarez, but for the most part, like, they're entering scarily, and they got to tread water lightly, that the boxing era where it's personality versus personality. Like, you know, Floyd Mayweather, I cannot tell you a single title he holds. I could make something up and guess, like, junior, I'm sure it's like junior welterweight or something like that, because they have so many titles. I'm sure he holds something. I could just pick an accident, but nobody fucking knows. It's just, you watch Floyd because you know he's the best. And we're now getting to a point now where there are guys fighting who we know are the best, and they're not the champion. And that's not a good place to be. You know, we have a guy out there in Conor who we know is the best featherweight. He's not fighting for the title. We have John Jones who, yeah, obviously there's some extenuating circumstances, but I look at Daniel Cormier, and I do think Cormier has done as much as he can to legitimize his title reign. I still think you're not number one. In fact, all of you guys are just fighting to be second on the totem pole. John Jones is the true king here. And, you know, it'll take time, but, you know, neither Conor or Jones or any of these guys, it's not like when George St. Pierre stepped away. When he stepped away, Johnny Hendricks had a really close fight. We knew that George St. Pierre was kind of semi-retiring. So the next guy that holds the title, we're like, okay, that's kind of legitimate. But with, you know, again, Jones isn't even 30 yet, I don't think. And Conor's not 30 yet. And these guys are in their prime and they're still wanting to fight. And so by them not fighting and not losing, it's just kind of weird. And unless they were to take so much time off like Dominic Cruz did. But I know why they did it. I understand their thought process. I think it's
short-sighted.
I think it's stepping over a dollar and collect a dime. It's just penny foolish dollar pound wise, whatever the fuck they're saying.
Do you think they strip Conor of the title, or do you think he relinquished it? They use the term relinquish.
It's six of one half dozen the other. I'm sure they told them you're losing the title here, and we're taking it no matter what. And Conor probably said fuck you, and then they said this is what the deal is. And I Conor's not stupid. I think he probably said all right, that's what it's going to be. If you guys want to say relinquished, so be it. But whatever, it doesn't matter, because if Conor wants to go down to fight at 145, he's just going to be like, they stole my title, and the king is back to reclaim his land. And
What do you think a fair amount of time is to strip somebody? Like, should it be a year? You think it should be a little longer if they haven't been able – they've been injured, a card got canceled, whatever. For whatever reason, they couldn't defend the belt, and there's really no set timetable on when they're going to be back for whatever reason. You think 18 months, 12 months? What would be fair?
I would look at 12 months as kind of like your starting point. Yeah. But it can't just be like he hasn't defended in 12 months, because he's going to do it in 13 months. Who cares? It's got to be more like, if you're anywhere, I would say around the 10-month mark, and you look forward, and you do not know when the guy will fight in the foreseeable future, and there are at least one, if not two other guys in the division who have clearly asserted a right to fight for the title, then I would say it's fair to grant an interim championship.
Yeah, that sounds fair. So some news broke earlier today as well. This is a mouthful to get out. The Mixed Martial Arts Athletes Association announced their formation today via a conference call. The fighters that are on their like first, I don't know if they're calling it a board of directors, but their first board has five fighters on it. I was going to say they're all UFC fighters, but one of them is actually currently a free agent, possibly. They've got George St. Pierre, Cain Velasquez, Donald Cerrone, Tim Kennedy, and TJ Dillashaw on this board. It's interesting because four of those guys are all represented by the Creative Artists Agency.
So you just looked that up and find that they all are?
Yes, all four of them are. The only one that's not, I believe, is Cerrone. So,
well, he's represented by Budweiser, but yeah.
Yeah, so basically the Creative Artists Agency, the abbreviation is CAA, they're the chief talent agency rival to WME-IMG. So there's a little possibly something going on behind the scenes here between these two huge, you know, agencies in WME and CAA. Interestingly enough, Bjorn Rebney, the former head of Bellator, is also acting as an advisor to the association. Basically, in their press release, they said their sole concentration is to fight for the rights of MMA fighters and force UFC's ownership, in parentheses, they write WME-IMG, to dramatically alter the company's decade-plus outrageous treatment of its athletes. Throughout the conference call, they basically declined to provide like a detailed plan, but said its goals include an out-of-court financial settlement with the UFC, an increase in revenue sharing and insurance and pension packages that do not currently exist for UFC athletes. There's a lot to digest there.
Yeah,
obviously.
First things first. Army man, Mr. I pull a gun on people, I'm so far to the right that I make, you know, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump's aborted baby blush. Mr. Tim Kennedy's joining the union. That's my favorite part. Anyways, go on.
There's some irony there. So where do you even start? So essentially, this association.
Is there a good place to start? Because okay. I didn't watch the thing. I read stuff, and Tony and I were talking about it. And here's a big one: there's backers behind this, and they're not telling people who it is. And
right.
That's fucking fishy as shit.
Well, you can assume it's CAA.
Then they should have said it was CAA or something.
Right.
Because if there's money behind this, then this is not. A clear, a union is usually, the unions usually have money behind them, but it tends to be other union members or something like that, and they're really just helping out fellow unions. If this is somebody who's seeing like an investment opportunity or something, things get really fucking hairy very quickly there. And agencies and agents are supposed to represent their athletes and their principals, and if they have any kind of money involved, that's just a go-to-jail conflict of interest. And I don't think I want to say I don't think it is, because I always think, who could be that stupid? But there's a lot of really dumb people. Most of them are lawyers. So this could easily – I mean, there could be something more coming down the pipe on this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've got a rudimentary understanding of associations versus unions. Like I just started reading about it today. but like my impression is part of the issue why they're calling themselves an association instead of a union is because none of the fighters in the UFC are currently considered employees. They're technically independent contractors. So I think there's an issue there with the terminology and how they're classified as an employee versus the independent contractor. And Bjorn, who I affectionately call Bjork, like Dana, essentially said they can get this process moving quicker if they don't form a traditional union, and they have this association instead. My impression is they're essentially the same thing. They're going to try and get, you know, more money for the fighters, essentially, more benefits for the fighters, like a union would do. But I think that legally there's some differences between the two. I think with a union, you have to collective bargain with them. In an association, you don't. There's some differences between the two, but they essentially have the same goals. But several times during that conference call, they went out of their way to say they weren't forming a union. This was not a union. It's an association. Are you real familiar with either term or how that works?
Kind of. I actually did a lot of during law school. I actually worked – I was an aide, research assistant to one of my professors who specialized in collective bargaining agreements. So I got a little bit of background with that stuff and helped her out and wrote some of edited some of her papers and things like that. And more than that, I am also the member of an association. I'm a member of actually the American Bar Association and the Illinois Bar Association. And one time I was a member of the DuPage County Bar Association just because I wanted to get access to get through the metal detectors quicker. So I paid the $100 a year. I don't do that anymore. It's weird. The fact that they're free agents doesn't mean they can call themselves independent contractors, and that's why they're not a union. It doesn't matter. Baseball players are independent contractors then by that same definition, and they formed a union. You know, everybody's a union. It's essentially, an independent contractor until they're federally declared an employee. And we've seen that with WWE fighting that shit for years. In this case, I think that professional fighters are, especially up until the Reebok deal came, UFC fighters were far closer to independent contractors than, like, professional wrestlers. And you see it even now, like, the reports of John Jones and Dan Henderson doing a grappling match with each other. And apparently that's going to happen. That's something that an independent contractor can do, an employee wouldn't be able to do. So, if I'm just guessing looking at this, in addition to the whole we can get this off the ground quicker thing, there's also an issue of if you want to form a union, there's an actual legal process. There's a federally, you go to the U.S. Labor Relations Board, and the union has to get certified. Right. And that means they got to go before a federal judge, and they have to very plainly hold elections, and if some other group wants to come in, say, the Major League Baseball Players Association, that's what they call it, MLBPA, it's a union though, if they wanted to come in and say, hey, we can represent these guys, we have similar types of interests, we want to be the ones to head the union, then they'd have the vote and things like that. Or they can just not have the vote, and then the judge won't certify it. And this will happen a lot of times where you'll have an existing union, say, we'll just say Local 101, the union for Ford Motor Company, and they will actually dissolve the union. Sometimes the union itself will dissolve itself so that they don't have to collectively bargain. Sometimes they don't want to do it at the moment. They don't think they have strong enough power. It can create, havoc legally. It can just really gum up the works. This thing, though, again, a rose by any other name is still a union. And they're going to be, I think they're going to act as a union. I think they're going to want, as soon as they think they can, to be certified as a union. That's, CAA.
So you're saying you don't believe Bjorn Rebney?
I've been patting myself on the back all day. Because on August 8th, 2015, I wrote an incredibly in-depth article. I was actually in a cabin in Minnesota about why George St. Pierre should form a union. It was specifically GSP should form a union. It was the second big piece I wrote for Half Garden when we started. The first one was exposing the drug deal. Oh, I was right on that one, everybody. And look at this one now. Like, I couldn't – it was like, holy shit. It's actually GSP forming a union for all the reasons I said he should. There's lots of good that could come if they do unionize. But when Bjorn Rebney gets involved, that immediately turned me off. I was just like, come on. Like, this guy he got fired from running Bellator. And, right. You know, he was bragging, like, when I ran Bellator, we paid, like, 50% of all of our revenues to the fighters. It's like, dude, you didn't have a choice. Also, you got fired because you ran that thing into the fucking ground. Like, you weren't good at it, even though I actually kind of enjoyed the way the product worked back then. But it just – I would – yes, they'll have union lawyers involved. And you can always go out there and find a union – a law firm that specializes in unions. And they'll all be more or less competent enough. Like, it's just the nature of the beast. But Bjorn Rebney being out there, him front and center as a point man, as a possible leader of the union, like – a strong, I mean, when it comes to unions, getting that leadership is so important. You can just look no further than baseball and football in America. Baseball has had strong leadership and a very unified, pardon the, players, and they have the greatest CBA in all pro sports. The NFL is almost just a mouthpiece for, the NFLPA is almost a mouthpiece for the NFL. It's so weak. And, you know, if you're in the UFC, honestly, they'd probably be lucky to have an NFL-style union. At least then they'd have something. But, I don't know, just do it right or don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, the Rebney thing is weird. I guess he is an attorney. That's how he got his – I shouldn't say his start. He probably started doing something different before he became a lawyer. But it's really odd because it's like the former guy who ran Bellator is now involved with these all these UFC fighters – and they're only going to try and, you know, work with the UFC and bargain with the UFC. They're not doing Bellator. And then you've got all these guys backed by the, you know, CAA, who are managing all these fighters. I don't want to say it's shady, but I'm a little skeptical on this thing. And, you know, you hate to say that because hopefully long term it helps the fighters and they make more money and have better health care and all that. I want to see that. But the motives here are very suspect.
I mean, just like if Eric Bischoff ran the Pro Wrestlers Union.
And only went against WWF. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or WWE. Yeah.
And that's also, I mean, that strikes me as very interesting that they say they only want to deal with UFC fighters.
Right.
That's like having a union that says, we only represent Ford, not Chevy. Yes, I know Bellator is not as big as the UFC, but they're big enough. I can understand saying, like, oh, you know, World Series of Fighting or RFA or whatever, that's the equivalent of the minor leagues, and the Major League Baseball Players Association doesn't represent the minor leaguers, much to the horrible, horrible detriment of the minor league baseball players. But it's just, again, like, that's just, like, at least just say in public, at least, like, yeah, we're going to negotiate with everybody. We want people from all stripes because how does it work? Like, how do you get more money if you're a fighter? You have leverage. How do you have leverage? Well, one big thing would be to use Bellator. And it fucking boggles my mind. The whole thing is just so weird. And yeah. I hope George St. Pierre, I know you have like a secret underground bunker to protect you from aliens. So maybe you're really going to be broke soon because you're getting taken for a ride or something. But
obviously you can't predict, but do you think this group will have any success, make any headway?
Nope. Look at the guy, I mean, in theory, anything can happen, but
Do you think that's because other fighters will see through it? They'll see Rebney and they'll see who all these guys are represented by and say, you know what? I think I'll pass. I'll wait for the next union that comes along, whether it's the Boris thing. That other group is having issues too. Did you see that?
Yeah, everybody's quitting the other union.
Yeah, Lucas Middlebrook, their lead attorney, and then, a fighter too.
Yeah, I can't think of her name right now.
Leslie Smith.
Well, she kind of quit also because she heard that they had like investments in the North Dakota pipeline, and so she was quitting over that. Which I don't know. I mean, if that's true, I mean, good for her. I guess if that's her principles, but I'm guessing that that's not their only investment. They're probably very diversified. So,
oh, they're probably doing way more fucked up shit than that.
Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah, she cares about North Dakota. Fine, whatever. Do you have any? Do you own a fucking pair of Nikes? I guarantee you, those kids are getting treated way worse every day than anybody is in North Dakota. Like, just right. Guarantee it. So, it's going.
So
to
be, you kind of just see it blowing over, going away.
Yeah, I think it goes away. Wow. I think some of it is just the nature of the beast. Fighting is not like other sports. Other sports, you have the ability to collectively bargain because you need more than one guy to play. You need the entire team. You need right. everybody to – it doesn't work. Whereas in MMA, all they really need in theory is two guys. Really, all they need is Conor McGregor and a warm body. They'll make $50 million. Whereas baseball can't do that. You know, they try to bring in scrubs and people kind of react poorly because they know it's not the best. And so with fighting, I mean, fighters are, first of all, they're independent by nature. The nature of their training is independent. The nature of the sport is independent. You know, baseball players, they compete against each other, but again, they also have a lot of people on, you know, look at baseball. Your active roster, you have a 40-man roster and an active everyday roster of 25 players. That's 25 guys per team who are absolutely unified and have no professional beef with each other. Whereas you go to, you know, any gym in the United States, I mean, you look at the fucking gym Eddie Alvarez was in. You had Eddie Alvarez, you had Frankie Edgar, Edson Barboza. All three of those guys could have realistically been number 1, 2, and 3 at lightweight. And they have a natural desire. They have a natural conflict of interest just sporting-wise, that you would never find in another sport. No other sports, like, oh, there's just too many guys. Like, when the Golden State Warriors have all this super talent, nobody's like, well, you guys are just going to have to break into two teams and play each other in the NBA Finals. You'd be like, no, that's just not how it works. Like, if you collect a bunch of talent, you could just be great. Tom Brady, they didn't bring up Brady and Belichick because they're like, well, you guys have been to 6 Super Bowls. You won 4. This is really getting out of hand. Like, we want to see Tom Brady go up against Gronk on the other side. It's not the way any sport works. And plus, I also think there's a lot of people with a lot of money at stake, not just the fighters, but this is not, we're in a far more sophisticated era than in past when the unions have formed. And, you know, these guys all have agents. They're all part of agencies. Like we've said, some of them are part of CAA. Some of them are part of the group that Uri Faber's with, Fighters Inc. Like, that's a really big group. Like, there's guys are already, they already have very good representation, intellectually at least. So there's a lot of, like, agents and stuff like that who might look at this and go, hold on. They're going to have to pay union dues. And they're going to have to be substantial union dues, especially from the top guys. That's cutting into that agent's paycheck. And maybe in 10 years it wouldn't matter because there'd be a new breed of agents who just are like in baseball where the agents come up through a system that exists with a union. But right now, if you're getting 10% of your fighter's income because you're his manager and you suddenly realize your take's going to go down to 7% maybe because he's got to give up 3 for the union, you as a manager are a little, I don't know if I want to lose, you know, are you going to regain that much more from having Bjorn Rebney essentially running your negotiations with Dana White? Like, holy fuck, that's the worst idea I've ever heard. Those two can't be near each other.
One guy who probably would be big in favor of a MMA union or association would be Cole Miller. He made some news this past week when he did an interview with Sherdog. He was unhappy because he was scheduled for the show in the Philippines, which was canceled after the BJ Penn Ricardo Lamas main event fell apart. He claims he was only paid 1/3 of his show money and not booked for another 2 months after that card was canceled. So his last fight, he got paid $33,000. So a third of that would be about $11,000. Then after all the training and the expenses and everything, he said he made a few $100. He also claimed he tried to get a meeting with the new owners, but was turned down. He is currently on the last fight of his deal and feels that the UFC does not want him back. Does this sound like sour grapes to you, or do you think Miller has a point here?
Well, first of all, I just adjusted my microphone and everything's sounding a little bit better here.
Yep.
Okay.
Sound good.
Yeah, it's fine on my end, but just making sure. Cole Miller should shut the fuck up. You're Cole Miller. Like, seriously, like, you're
He's been in the UFC for 10 years. So he's been around a long time.
Cole Miller's somebody that you go, who the fuck is that guy when he speaks up? And I, like, I mean, Cole Miller's a kind of moron that gets a fucking tattoo of American Top Team on his bicep. Anybody gets a tattoo of the fucking gym they belong to is a, I say that, you know, I actually know several people with gym tattoos, but they're not listening to this. But, it's like, your fucking fight got canceled. In, for two reasons. One, you lost a main event. Two, a fucking hurricane came through. Like, you think the UFC is just going to give you 30 grand for fucking nothing? And if you got 10 grand, I don't know what the fuck he's doing that he only has like 500 bucks left over when it's all said and done. I have a feeling that he's counting things like, you know, eating food and paying rent as expenses. No, Cole, that's just stuff we all have to do. That's just called being alive. You have to eat. It's just something you do. And if you're paying 10 grand for training partners, brother, you need to get some new training partners. So, and you only got to fight 2 months later, a whole 2 months? That's a fucking huge turnaround. Ryan Hall still hasn't had a fucking fight in UFC since he won Ultimate Fighter last year. Like, there's a lot of people out there who are begging for fights who don't know when they're going to get their next fight. And I know things are tough. And I sympathize with guys going for a dream and who don't realize their station in life. But Cole Miller's a ham and egger. He's an undercard guy. He brings zero value to the UFC beyond the fact that he puts on entertaining fights. I like his fights. I think he's a really good fighter. I think his personality is kind of engaging enough. But he also just lost to Bruce Leroy back in May. And you got paid 33 grand for that. And guess what? They just booked you again real quick. So if you got 10 grand for no reason, you didn't actually fight. They just gave him 10 grand. Maybe just to be nice. I don't know. But if he got 10 grand for that, if he wins his next fight, that'll be another 66 grand, up to 75 grand here. And say he gets a performance of the night bonus, another 50K. Suddenly, Cole Miller is up at about $125,000 in 3 months instead of 500 bucks or whatever he's claiming like he's poor. I'd like to make 125 grand in 3 months. Shit, most people would be happy to make it 10 grand for 3 months worth of work. Like, and you didn't get beat up. And you think you have some sort of drawing power? Like, Bellator will take you for the right price, but guess what? Ben Henderson, you know what his disclosed pay was for his last fight?
50 grand.
50 grand. And you know Bellator's not, like, hiding a ton of, like, they're not doing huge backstage bonuses like UFC does. So he's probably not making that much more, which makes it all the dumber that he left. So if that's basically the high end, and that's a former multiple-time champion in the UFC, a headliner and all this stuff, and you're Cole Miller, who lost to Bruce Leroy on, I think, Fight Pass back in May. Like, who are you kidding? If you just came off a shit-ass performance where you could have been cut, you're lucky they didn't cut you. With all the cuts and everything that's going on, the fact that they turned around and immediately got you a fight 2 months, that's actually pretty damn good. What, are you just expected to go out there and fight the next day? I don't know. Jump up. Was he volunteering to fight Donald Cerrone at 205? I don't think so. I mean, so just, it's like, again, everybody wants to make money, and it's fine. You have, everybody has a family, and I actually am legitimately sympathetic to that. But on the other hand, when he says things like, I don't know, I should just quit and go work at Starbucks, I think if that's your option in life, if, like, the only other thing you're qualified to do is make a mocha latte or whatever, you maybe should rethink how you're going about things. You shouldn't just throw everything into... I know guys have dreams, but for fuck's sake, don't... How do people not just open their eyes and look around at their life and go, oh, this is who I am. This is where I'm at. This is how good I am. I should pay attention. Like, I feel like Joe Lozon gets it. Joe Lozon, I think, you know, he wants to win. He'd like to fight for a title. But he also understands on some level where he's at. And you don't hear Joe Lozon bitch. Joe Lozon right. knows what his job is. He knows where he's at in life. And
he's done well with all those bonuses. He's made a lot of, I want to say a lot of money. I mean, compared to, you know, like baseball players, pro players. But, I mean, I bet you he's averaging 100 grand a fight.
Oh,
you know what I mean? With all the bonuses he's made in his career.
I'll bet he's made close to, I bet he's made 900 to $1 million in bonuses over the years.
Speaking of big money, a site called awfulannouncing.com wrote that WME-IMG is hoping to quadruple their TV rights deal and bring in $450 million a year when they sign their new TV contract in 2018. The article mentioned that the UFC is seeking a 10-year contract and was planning on giving up production of the events themselves, allowing the new broadcast networks to do it. So my question is this. If UFC can really get close to $500 million a year, they're shooting for $450 million a year, what do you think they have to give up in return? Are they going to cut back on pay-per-views and put more main events on free TV? Are they just talking crap and trying to drive the price up by saying $450 million? Because obviously you can't get $450 million a year with Robert Whittaker as your headliner on FS1.
Yeah, hold on. I'm doing some quick math here.
Okay. Because to me, it's like you'd have to have Conor McGregor on Fox to make that worthwhile for a network. Who's going to pay for these FS1 cards, that kind of money?
Yeah, they're going to get a boost. But look, WWE didn't get a huge jump in their rights fees. And UFC's different. UFC has more credibility.
I think what happens is if you have a few bidders, they start competing, and one of them really wants you, and they need you. They're desperate because, you know, they don't have the NFL or baseball or whatever the hot sports properties at the time are. But that's going to be the question. Come, you know, late 2017, who's going to want this thing? Who's going to compete with one another and outbid the other guy? Because that's the big question. Is there going to be a couple networks who really want UFC on their stations?
Yeah, and the timing of this is all – I mean, everything in life is timing. And on the one hand, the UFC is in a good position because there's nothing to bid on. Football is locked up for like another 5 years or something like that. Baseball is locked up for a while. Like, all these major sports have all signed huge deals. And everybody looks at the refrain is similar, just, oh, well, you know, everybody's trying to lock up sports because sports is DVR-proof and blah, 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 blah. And at the same time, in the past, I think, you know, it's been going around a lot lately. In the past 2 months, ESPN's lost like a million subscribers.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that's like $70 million a year or some shit like they've lost. And granted, it's ESPN. They're making billions per year. But I don't think the NFL, Monday Night Football, is profitable on ESPN. It's a loss leader for them. And they're, you know, ESPN's trying to cut corners. And if they look at the UFC, if the UFC's on ESPN, I've never liked that marriage because I just don't know if ESPN gets it. And yes, if they're in business with each other, it'll help. But the UFC did what other sports couldn't do, which is make it big without ESPN. Like when, you know, the NHL, when they lost ESPN, or I should say chose to go with NBC Sports, ESPN cut off a lot of coverage.
Right.
The UFC has not gone with ESPN, and they've had decent coverage. If they get in bed with ESPN, if I'm ESPN, the only way it makes any sense for me financially is if I get some sort of cut of the pay-per-view, because that's where all the money's to be made.
That was the other question that this article mentioned. Would they also, you know, produce the pay-per-views? Because essentially now UFC does everything in-house. They pick the announcers, they pick, you know, Buffer to do the ring entrances. They have control over what the final end product looks like on TV for the most part. And that was part of their initial deal with Fox, and now they're saying they're willing to give that up. So you got to wonder, if they give up the regular broadcast production, will they also give up the pay-per-view production and hand that over and maybe give whoever their broadcast partner is a cut of the pay-per-view? Because it's like I can't imagine anybody paying almost $500 million a year for the product they're putting out on the Fox networks now. It just doesn't compute for me.
Yeah, again, the only way it makes sense is if these networks get desperate. And maybe ESPN continues to lose subscribers and they think, oh shit, this can help us, you know, stem the tide a little bit. And same with Fox Sports 1. Like, if UFC was on Fox Sports 1, I would watch the channel, I don't know, maybe never. Like, they occasionally have international football matches on, some German soccer, and some baseball. But otherwise, like, I'm not going to tune in to watch Skip Bayless and, what's his face, Shannon Sharp pretend like their First Take or whatever. Like,
right.
It's a dead network without the UFC and NASCAR probably. So,
yeah.
And that's the thing the UFC's got is they'll have Fox, they'll have ESPN, they'll have NBC all wanting it. They'll possibly have Turner. I don't like the idea of them going to Turner. At one time, that would have made sense, but that's when you think of UFC in pro wrestling terms. And, you know, for so many years, it was easy to compare them to WWE because they were very similarly produced, similar structure. Okay, maybe similar demographic. I think the UFC has really transitioned into the true mainstream sports world so they can go to a mainstream sports network. And the one other thing they have in their pocket is in a year, I mean, the technology, not Murphy's Law, Miller's Law, you know, technology moving so quickly, a full on-demand, you know, over-the-top service like they have with the Fight Pass, it's not the best option for the UFC, but they've done a very good job, I think, of creating a buffer so that if things go bad, they're set up for the future very well. That, you know, like, a lot of these networks aren't, and they're all kind of behind the ball, and they're all like, oh shit, trying to play catch-up with Netflix, and they're finding it really difficult to do so, because one of the great things to be in life is an early adopter. If you're first in and you have a good product, that's just the most important thing of all, and the UFC's developing Fight Pass very well. So maybe not for this contract, but for the next TV contract, they'll have the leverage of, hey, we've got 500,000 subscribers paying us $10 a month. You guys got to be able to beat that. And then they have real leverage.
Right. No, that could definitely be a factor with it. The one quick thing I noticed was they're saying they want $450 million a year for 10 years, which equals $4.5 billion. Interestingly enough, and they paid $4.2 billion for the thing. I'm guessing that might be a coincidence, but I found that kind of funny, a little ironic, maybe.
Well, yeah, again, we all know the baseball and football are – football is a weird one because I don't really hear a ton about what local teams get for football rights. I know a lot about what local teams get for baseball rights because it's all independently negotiated. And some of the – I mean, the Dodgers, who aren't even – they're only on TV in 30% of Los Angeles due to some fighting going on. They're getting somewhere around $150, $200 million a year. And that's for one team in one local market. And a lot of teams are getting, you know, really big, big money. The Yankees, you know, started the whole deal when they created their own network. They're actually kind of ahead of everybody doing that. So, and, you know, you look at the English Premier League. They have a $1 billion deal for 6 years. That's about $150 million a year or whatever it is, something like that. Not you know, and soccer is a drop in the bucket compared to UFC, although I think they both have similar rates of potential growth in that they draw from a younger demographic, soccer in particular because it can draw from a Hispanic demographic that everybody wants to grab, and the UFC desperately tries to force Velasquez down our throat pretending like we're going to give a shit. So, I mean, there's real, real big money out there in sports, but everybody's predicting that bubble's going to burst. And
it always does.
You would think so. I mean, and when it does, some sports are going to be hurt. And, you know,
I mean, it's crazy to think what the landscape – you can't predict what the landscape will be in 10 years because who knows how you'll be watching TV then.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we take it for granted everybody's always gonna have like cable or Comcast or whatever. But a lot of shit's just gonna be all on demand. And maybe you'll just watch football on your smart TV or live stream it from the NFLnetwork.com or whatever they're calling it, the landscape could just be entirely different in 10 years, just like it was very different 10 years prior.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was no Fight Pass. There was no Netflix. There was – Netflix mailed you DVDs 10 years ago. you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I know.
The world changed. The technology and everything advances so quick. The fact that they're even asking for $450 million for 10 years, like, blows my mind. Because I can't imagine if you're like a Fox executive that you're going to be able to, like, have a real good feel on where you're going to be at in 10 years. Fox could be, you wouldn't think they'd be bankrupt, but the game changes. There's no blockbusters anywhere. You can't go rent a movie anymore. The world changes quick, and you don't know it, and you don't know what it's going to be. So,
yeah, if I'm the USC, and like, again, in addition to wanting to get as much money in rights fees, you also, and again, we don't really know what the new owners truly understand, but I would hope they understand that the sport still needs to be developed. It still needs to be, you know, supplanted into the mainstream media more and more, and don't make the mistake that hockey did. Although, on the other hand, having said that, of all like the big sports networks, NBC far and away is the best of all of them. And I say that just as a huge soccer fan, because they literally, they're really, really good with their on-demand, as far as if you want to watch every single game that England has. Every single game is available, either on one of the NBC networks or on their NBC Sports app, and they have it on Apple and all this stuff. So they're actually doing a pretty good job of developing apps and things like that. I don't see Fox having one. ESPN has one. It kind of sucks. I don't really like using it. ABC doesn't seem to have anything. I don't even know if ABC has any sports, period. I think they have basketball, maybe. But, yeah, you know, it's such a weird world to look at. And, I mean, God, I was just thinking about this today. Like, I'm like, look at me. I'm so smart. George St. Pierre leading a union. Because when I wrote that a year ago, like, Conor McGregor had one big fight. That's it. One pay-per-view. So I wouldn't have used Conor as the guy to lead the charge. Here we are a year plus later, and Conor McGregor has single-handedly taken the UFC to a new level in under 12 months. And, I mean, who knows what happens in 12 months from now. Maybe Conor goes out and loses every single fight he has in 2017 and he retires and Ronda's gone. And suddenly the UFC is like, oh, shit, our biggest draw is a cokehead. So what do we do then? So, yeah, it's...
You bring back Brock Lesnar again.
Well, assuming he's not assuming he's not suspended for 2 years.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and God damn it. Their biggest possible draws are a chicken Ronda, who's made it clear she doesn't want to fight for a long time. Conor, who at any moment will either want to own the UFC or who could lose to a wrestler. Khabib will, oh, that's a danger. A cokehead, or the corpse of Brock Lesnar was in his 40s getting beat up by Bill Goldberg or whatever. He's on the gas. Like, you hate – every time you reach a peak, it's easy to say – you know, look at that. They have nowhere to go but down, but UFC has kept going up. Like, if they were a stock, you'd be amazed at how much they've consistently risen. And their valleys, they're pretty good at controlling them. But it's still a sport based a lot on luck when it comes to making money. Like, you just have to luck into a guy like Conor, who's not just charismatic, but can put on great performances inside the cage. And same with Ronda. And I don't see anybody in the horizon right now, but again, 2 years ago, I would have thought, yeah, Conor McGregor's a draw. He's got a lot of charisma. He just beat Poirier and all that. I'm like, yeah, this guy's, if he talks shit, he'll be a pay-per-view draw. I never would have predicted him reaching these types of levels where I legitimately think he should be drawing 2 million pay-per-view buys. And if he doesn't, I think, something's off a little bit there.
Speaking of actually nothing you're even talking about, there's some upcoming fight news that we need to talk about. It has been confirmed that Kelvin Gastelum and Tim Kennedy will now be fighting at UFC 206. That fight was actually mentioned on the past show in Melbourne this weekend, the Fight Night show, but it had an asterisk and it said waiting commission approval. This is a weird one because the New York State Athletic Commission has waived Kelvin Gastelum's 6-month suspension for no showing the UFC 205 weigh-ins because he paid them a $2,000 fine. So initially they suspend you for 6 months, but if you give them $2,000, you can pay off your suspension, I guess. Have you ever heard of that before?
So does Thiago Alves get the same deal? Does he only have to pay like $750?
Like, I don't know. Like, what is that?
When this came down, that they announced this fight, it was during the fights last Saturday, and I wrote, right. And I specifically wrote, this is a test for the New York State Athletic Commission. Their credibility is at stake here, and this tells me that they're a joke of a commission.
After one show.
Because like, it tells me that they're just like all the other commissions, which is weird because when they, you know, the Rashad Evans thing, I think is just, it's more than just, I think it's just so bad that no commission can ignore it. That's the only thing I can think of. But they never should have suspended Gastelum in the first place. It was the fucking dumbest thing I ever heard. Same with Thiago Alves, especially Alves. I know I ranted about that. But, like, either have a suspension or don't. And like, literally, the very first time anybody challenged their suspension, they said, oh, okay. And they did it over Kelvin Gastelum. It's not like they were, you know, it's not like it's Connor or maybe an athletic commissioner, but you know what? He's a big deal. I understand. Fine. It's Kelvin Gastelum. Why the fuck are you breaking any rules for him? So, this is something I would expect out of Texas. And I guess New York wants to be the new Texas, which, you know what?
It's bizarre. Like, what if it was a drug suspension? Can you pay that off?
Yeah,
like, it's crazy.
Exactly. Can John Jones go out there and, like, factor in whenever he goes to get an 8-ball? Can he factor in the price? All right, I gotta pay $300 for the 8-ball. It's gonna be another $3,000 for the fine. All right, yeah, I can afford a party this weekend. Like, what the? They should just release a schedule. Did you get a DUI? $200. Did you beat up a woman? $5,000. Just, yeah. Instead of having suspensions, just make them fines. Did you cheat on, were you full of androstenedine and Stanisol? That's a $10,000 fine. Plus, $2,000? What the fuck kind of penalty is $2,000?
Like, well, the other thing I love about these state fines is it just goes to like, whatever the state coffers, like it's so stupid.
Yeah,
basically, like, you take some money from them and you say, "All right, you don't want to compare it to like one of those like when the mafia goes into the business and wants like a cut of all their money and all they made." But that's kind of what it's like. You flip me a few bucks and we'll make this go away for you. So yeah, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But anyway, Gastelum has a fight and Kennedy has a fight. They can beat the crap out of each other, UFC 206.
I almost don't want to watch that fight on principle. Just because Gastelum, I mean.
Gastelum might miss weight. There's a possibility he'll miss 185. Oh, you never know.
The amount of, you know, grief eating he's been doing or whatever, it's got to be a ton. If there's anybody else, I'd want to see it just because, like, fuck you, Kelvin. You miss weight so bad, and you fuck Cerrone out of a lifetime achievement type of deal. But it's fucking Tim Kennedy, and he's such a dick. I don't want to watch Tim Kennedy unless I think there's a chance he gets hurt. But I don't want to see either one of them win. So unless this ends with, like, you know, like Rocky style, two guys landing a punch at the same time and knocking each other out, I'm gonna be disappointed no matter what happens. So fuck this fight, Kyle. Damn, I don't want to watch that.
Okay, but do you want to watch Gabby Garcia fight a 52-year-old congresswoman and former pro wrestler Shinobu Kandori on New Year's Eve?
Sure. I'm sad because I didn't get my Sakuraba prediction correct. But in my defense,
you got somebody way older and weirder than Sakuraba, even.
Yeah, I mean, I try to think what could Japan do to be weird. I didn't see bringing former pro wrestling congressperson into a real fight. Like, this is almost the same as if they had, I don't know, Jesse Ventura fight Brock Lesnar. Like, what the fuck? This is horrible. All the people involved, the Japanese chick did not look thrilled. And I know they're kind of a stoic people, but even by their standards, she did not look thrilled by this. Gabby Garcia basically said, I don't really know about this, but I'm going to do it. Like, whatever, it's fucking Japan. I hope your, Bjorn Redney's group tries to represent them also, but fuck, what a joke.
Yeah, I think out of all the freak show fights I've ever seen, this might be the freakiest one.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
Because just Garcia fight, Gabby Garcia fighting MMA alone is freaky, because she's always going to be 100 pounds bigger than everybody she fights, and she's so bad. Like, she's so bad on top of it. But yeah. Now she's fighting a 52-year-old little Japanese woman. Like, it's ludicrous. Like, even the sap fights in, like, I'm trying to think of even Fedor, Chao Hong Man. I mean, all these freak show fights you look back on and you're like, what the hell? I think this trumps all of them.
Yeah, I think this is,
this is special.
This is really up there. Cause like, yeah, when Bob Sapp fought dudes who were like literally half his size, they were
fight
least,
like a cartoon character or something.
Yeah,
once.
Kinnikum Mantaro. But at least it was like a real fighter underneath the mask. And like he fought kind of hard. Some of these other guys early in his Pride days, and like again, they were at least they were middleweights, and it was stupid. But they could actually they had trained to throw a punch in their life. And when Fyodor fought Zulu, at least Fyodor was smaller in that case. This is like we're gonna take the bigger person who's got way more skills, although who looks really shitty in fighting, and have them fight somebody who's old enough to be an actual grandmother. Like what?
Easy.
Although we did just see this past weekend in college football, I can't remember which school it was, had a 55-year-old. I think he ran four plays as a running back. So I think everybody's forgetting the lessons of what CTE does to people because this is really stupid.
In other fight news, this is kind of late breaking, and I've been trying to read up a little bit on it right now. But this is straight from ESPN.com. Brett Okamoto over there. UFC star Conor McGregor has obtained a license to professionally box in the state of California. McGregor's agent, Adi Attar, informed ESPN.com of the development on Wednesday. California State Athletic Commission Executive Director Andy Foster also confirmed the licensing. The Irish fighter is still obviously under contract with UFC, which will be a problem if he actually wants to box at some point. This news will obviously add speculation to, you know, McGregor and Mayweather eventually fighting. Well, not fighting, but boxing, I guess. According to Foster, the California State Athletic Commission is committed to approving appropriately matched up opponents only. So that's just in like the last 10 minutes that came out.
Yeah, I think it's just a publicity thing.
Me too. He's trying to keep his name in the press.
Yeah, and good for him. But, I mean, let's say if he was ever going to box and fight Floyd Mayweather, which is the only boxing match he would ever take, it'd be in Vegas.
Right.
Or Madison Square Garden. Like, you're not doing that fucking in Los Angeles. I mean, yeah. It would probably be just as big, but you're doing the mega fights. You do Madison Square Garden or you do Vegas. Vegas, I mean, all Floyd's fights, the big ones, they were all in Vegas. They weren't in Los Angeles. And I think it's pure publicity and just hey, good for Conor. The guys are a genius doing this shit.
Yeah, I'm looking on the old Twitter right now, and Okamoto kind of raised a decent point. He wrote, Conor McGregor still hasn't publicly commented on how the UFC handled the featherweight belt. Maybe this counts.
I guess. I don't know. Conor's done so many weird bitchy things in the past when he's upset. The whole all of last June when he acted like such a punk. So
right. But, I mean, he could just be trolling the UFC. I mean, literally. I wouldn't put it past him.
Oh, I think that if I asked him, I'd do it.
We know you would.
Although I actually would have waited. I think he'd make a mistake doing it right now. You just got all this attention. Wait until, you know, middle of January or February when people need to be reminded of you. And everyone's like, ooh, his name's in the news. Wonder what he's going to do. Is he going to actually box now? I haven't heard from him in a bit.
Or it leads a little more credence to the idea that they were going to need an army to take the featherweight title away from him. All that talk he had going into 205, maybe this is saying, hey, they shouldn't have done that. I'm pissed. Now I'm going to go box. Even though if he has no intention of doing that, it could be played off that way that McGregor's not going to take them stripping him of the title laying down. I mean, that could be part of the motive. I don't know.
It could also just be as simple as McGregor's trying to feel out WMEIMG. He doesn't really know exactly how these guys operate, how to deal with them. A lot of fighters seem to be having difficulty adjusting to the new regime. They see things the way they were, and they don't know why things are different. But and frankly, as a pundit, so to speak, I don't know always what to make of it. A year ago, I would have said, there's no way in the hell the UFC's not stupid. They never would have done this. But maybe WMEI, maybe they look at it, or WMEIMG, maybe they look at things and they think they don't really give a shit about, you know, 5 years from now. And they think, if we do Conor and Floyd, that'll do, you know, 5 million buys at $100 and we'll make $150 million profit. And that's better than just having Conor fight Nate Diaz or something like that. And maybe they're not as sophisticated and don't truly understand the discrepancy in skill. Or maybe they just don't give a shit. So,
right.
And if you're Floyd, I mean, if you're Conor, you know, you'd be looking at a payday that would probably equal everything you'll ever make in MMA. So, and if you're Floyd, it's a fucking no-brainer if you're Floyd.
Oh, yeah.
But, I don't know. He ain't going to box.
I mean, I know. Although, I agree. I agree with you.
I kind of hope he does, just because it would be a hell of a fucking spectacle. Like,
I would watch. That $100.
I think that'd be bigger than Mayweather and Pacquiao. I think that would just like take over things in a way that, like, holy shit, fight of the century, what's going on?
Yeah, and it's funny too because essentially SportsCenter tweeted that out, and it's already got 11,000 likes and 9,000 retweets in, you know, half an hour or whatever it's been, at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. So, it's a big deal in that it's getting talk, I guess. Whether anything comes of it will remain to be seen. There are three shows coming up this weekend. Bellator.
Three?
Yeah, come on. You gotta get ready, get the computer out this weekend again. Bellator is running back-to-back cards on Friday, December 2nd and Saturday, December 3rd. They're coming live from Thackerville, Oklahoma. On Friday, the show is headlined with Eduardo Dantes defending the bantamweight title against Joe Warren. Then on Saturday, we have a headliner of Joe Tamanglo versus Darian Caldwell, number two. Anything you're looking forward to on these Bellator cards?
They're seriously running two fucking shows back to back like that?
Yes.
The fucking balls of this company. I knew they had a show coming up because Emmanuel Sanchez was fighting. It was scheduled to fight, and he had to pull it with an injury from Rufus Sport. I think he was going to fight for, I think, the featherweight championship. I mean, when you said there were three shows, I assume some World Series of Fighting shit I forgot about.
There could be. I might have forgot about that. That's possible. No, there's no show. They're not doing any shows till New Year's
Eve.
Oh,
that's right. You know
what? They canceled all their shows.
Yeah. But at least they're doing the right thing. It's free fighting.
They canceled the New Year's show, too.
Wait, they did?
No, they should.
Oh, fuck. That'd be good. I mean, fuck. Did they look at what UFC did last weekend and be like, well, you guys did two shows on the same day. We'll come close to doing that ourselves. Like, whatever. If they're making money, or if the people in charge are happy, it's free fighting for me to watch. actually, the Dantes Warren fight sounds that should be interesting. But although I think Joe Warren's going to get knocked the fuck out because he's old and he gets knocked out a lot. He's just too tough for his own good, and it's finally caught up to him. But overall, just whatever.
Yeah, I mean, these cards don't have a lot in the way of name value. I mean, on Friday night, on the undercard, they've got LC Davis versus Marcus Galvo, Chris Honeycutt, Antonio McKee's kid.
McKee's kid?
Yes, AJ McKee is fighting.
Wow.
Yeah, he's 5-0. But yeah, it's both of the cards. I mean, to me, the Friday night card's actually better than the Saturday night card. Cause nobody cares about Joe Taimanglo and Darren Caldwell fighting again. I mean, Taimanglo had that big upset. Like at the time, he was like a 16-1 dog or something. It was one of the bigger upsets in MMA history as far as betting wise goes. But, nobody's screaming to see that. And that's the main event. I mean, the rest of the undercard, I mean, there's Justin Lawrence on it, and there's really no other names. Chidi Ninja Kawani's on it. But besides that, there's nobody even like a hardcore fan has even heard of. It could be a tough weekend for them ratings-wise.
I mean, the fuck, UFC can't really do that many shows in succession. Whatever, Bellator, go home, you're drunk.
Like, I wonder if it's because they were getting paid by Spike or if they had a deal. It's at one of these Indian Native American reservations. So maybe they got they were paid shows or something. But I don't see a lot of people talking about these shows or looking to watch them. I mean, you didn't even know they were happening and they're a day away.
I mean, I had a vague idea that maybe there was one show. Again, because of Manny Sanchez, but
yeah,
two shows. Fuck off! Come on! What the fuck is that? Are they like close to each other? Does Bellator even have two cages? I'm not even joking. Do they?
No,
actually
they're in the same city. That's what I'm saying.
Wait,
they're both
in the same city.
Yeah, it's in the same casino. Friday night and Saturday.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
Yeah,
that's even better. The dogs looked at me. Oh, this is tremendous. Well, Bellator, you've outdone yourself now. This is great. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, they got to be getting some deal with the casino.
Yeah, I'm presuming, but it's odd that Spike was willing to run. You know what I mean? It's
well,
weird.
Well, you know, it's either that or cops reruns.
Right, but cops is probably cheaper and would probably do as well in the ratings as these two cards.
That's true. There might be more violence, so.
There could be. So then also on Saturday night, competing with these, the second awesome Bellator show from Thackerville, we've got the Ultimate Fighter finale, coming from Las Vegas. This will be on FS1. It's probably happening right now as we speak. The finals of the flyweight tournament are airing now. Of course they were taped, you know, 2-3 months ago. The rumored winner of the tournament all along has been Tim Elliott, and he is in the finals tonight. So it's presumed he wins the fight and will go on to fight Demetrius Johnson this Saturday. So we're going to get a flyweight title fight on free TV with Demetrius Johnson, who a lot of people right now would probably call the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. So that's kind of a nice perk this weekend, if you like the smaller fighters. And also on the card, we've got the semi-main event has the two tough coaches from this season of Joseph Benavidez and Henry Cejudo fighting, which are probably, you know, the second and third best guys in the division fighting. So kind of a fun free show with like the most elite flyweights in the world. If you're into that, it could be a good card.
Yeah. Yeah, the rumors of what's-his-face
Tim Elliott
winning have been out there for a long time. I'm kind of surprised Nevada's gone along with this and not, like, made it official or whatever they do. It's still weird to see a world title fight being contested on with 2 days of hype.
Yeah.
Tim Elliott's looked good on The Ultimate Fighter, but he's just going to get destroyed. just the way he fights, it's like an uncoordinated, lesser athletic version of Dominic Cruz, and he just leaves way too many openings. But Cejudo and Benavidez, that's a really damn good fight, too. I mean, that, to me, is a good enough fight to headline, you know, Fight Night card, Ultimate Fighter finale. I think there's a couple of other fights in the undercard that aren't bad either. It looks like...
Yeah. On the undercard, a few stood out to me. There's Jake Ellenberger versus Jorge Masvidal, Sarah McMahon versus Alexis Davis, Gray Maynard is back fighting Ryan Hall, who you actually mentioned earlier.
Oh, shit.
Huh. And Rob Font versus the caged veteran from MTV, Matt Schnell. So there's some fun stuff on this undercard. It's I feel like compared to the Australia show, there's a lot more name fighters, a lot more recognizable faces, and kind of more elite guys as well. Not only do you know the names, but they're probably better fighters as well. So
yeah, I thought
to me, this is like, I want to say this is like a treat, but to me, it's a free card with a title fight and probably the second and third best guys in the division, plus some names on the undercard and some action fights. I'm liking this show.
Yeah, I think it's actually a very deep card for what they're doing. In the old days, it would be one fight on top that was good, and then just like all the guys from Ultimate Fighter fight each other. Well, they got away from that, although half of those guys have been fighting on other shows already. I thought Sarah McMahon had been cut.
No.
I could have sworn she had been cut, but I guess no. She's not. So,
might be after Saturday.
Yeah, I feel like if you're a female fighter who's confident at 135, it takes a lot to get cut. Like, there's nobody there.
Yeah, Jessica I is still there.
She still hasn't been cut. Holy fuck.
She's taking a year off to get her mind right.
Ah, well, then they'll cut her after that. yeah, I mean, no. Oh, top to bottom, though. Pretty good card. Ellenberger and Masvidal, that was the one I was thinking of. I'm like, that's a really interesting fight. Because Masvidal has made a decent transition to 170. He's fighting a guy who he has a way bigger advantage technique-wise on the feet. But power-wise, Ellenberger is Ellenberger. This is, Benavidez and Cejudo. It's actually a shame that's not five rounds. I wish that was five rounds, because that would be a really good... Wait, I say that, I have no idea if it actually be good, because flyweights are so hit and miss. But, yeah, we got the three best flyweights on the planet all fighting, and Tim Elliott. So, yeah, it's... That's a pretty damn good. That's something to get excited for. I have something to look forward to on Saturday night. Yeah.
Who do you like in the Benavidez Cejudo fight?
Benavidez, just more.
Yeah, me too. I think so too. To me, it's always been a question with Cejudo is he won a gold medal in wrestling, so obviously he's an elite athlete on probably a different level than Mighty Mouse. And Benavidez, you would think. But the question is, could he catch up in time before he got too old and get the striking and the well-rounded game? And to me, he's still, like, young in his career. He's 10-1 and with his only loss to DJ. And he's fighting Benavidez, who's 24-4 throughout the course of his entire career. So the question is, like, can he catch up in time to these, like, top guys, to your DJ and Benavidez? So this is like, I don't want to say a career-defining fight for Cejudo, but if he loses this, I don't want to say it's the end of the road, but he's a long way from a title fight, and how much longer does he want to put time in and doing this training and getting punched in the face? Is he even going to come back if he loses again? Like, I have serious doubts if it's something he wants to do after this. So a big fight for him.
Yeah, he's always been kind of an odd one. Won an Olympic gold medal. I think he was 19 or 20 when he did it. May have been a little too much too soon as far as like maturity is concerned. Obviously, phenomenal athlete. He's had his weight issues. He's adapted decently to MMA, but I've always felt that it's just rudimentary.
Like his striking.
Like his striking is just rudimentary. And on the ground, he doesn't seem like he's adapted well on the ground to what he has to do. And he's just so physically gifted that he's been able to overcome a lot of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, Benavidez is just, you know, hyper well-rounded. And, I mean, right now, Benavidez, I think, is, I would say he's number, with Dodson out of the division, probably number one after Mighty Mouse. And actually, I was really, really impressed with Kyoji Horiguchi the other day. I thought he looked really good beating Ali Bagoutinov. I think that may have been in Australia. If so, I recant what I said before, and I give that my best performance because he smoked Bagoutinov. He just outworked
him. That was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
That was on one. I don't know if it was Ireland, Dublin. It was probably Dublin.
So many shows. I can't really keep your track of
anything. Well, that was the day with the two shows. Well, that's why this card looks good to me. Because after the Dublin show, that Sao Paulo card, and then the Melbourne show, it's like, ugh. It was like all those cards were just like, you know, low-level guys that you don't know, a lot of local fighters. And it was just like, you know, average middling MMA. Like, this card's got some good fights. Like, this is good. I like this.
Yeah, it's it's flyweight heavy, which means that there's always a chance it's just going to be, you know, a lot of movement, but not the drama that you want out of a fight. Mm-hmm. And there's always sometimes I get very hyped up. It's just big name versus big name, and I know they're both very good. But the reality is I watch MMA in part for who's good, and I also watch it in large part to be entertained. Like baseball, I watch baseball just to watch my team win. I don't care if it's 1-0 or 10-0. I prefer 10-0. But in MMA, you know, I'd rather see these guys have a really good fight and, you know, something weird. I don't know. I have no rooting interest. I just want a good fight. I think it should be. I think style-wise, Benavidez is very similar. You know, he's just Mighty Mouse, just not as good. And Cejudo is not as well-rounded, but again, Benavidez isn't as good as Mighty Mouse, and that's the only guy to really challenge Cejudo. So we'll see what this has to offer.
Yeah, and obviously DJ, major heavy favorite against Tim Elliott or the other guy that he might be fighting.
Oh, he's going to fight Tim Elliott, I'm sure. And
me too.
He's gonna smoke him. Like I said before, the way Elliott fights, it's like he's kind of like Dominic Cruz. He does things unconventionally, but he's not as slick. His balance isn't as good. He doesn't have his footwork as on point, and he leaves a lot of openings. A lot of times he's squirming out of positions and has, you know, entertaining scrambles. Mighty Mouse is good enough that he'll capitalize on that. And Mighty Mouse, I mean, what can you say about a guy who fights his ass off, and you know, one fight knocks Cejudo out, and I think the first round with a body shot. Another fight, he taps out Horiguchi with 1 second left in the fight. Like, that's the kind of nonstop, relentless pressure that Mighty Mouse brings to a fight, and that is an elite level mindset combined with a guy who is a phenomenal athlete, who's incredibly technical, who's in his peak, and seems very comfortable doing what he's doing. So, yeah, I think Mighty Mouse walks away with his title, and I think he makes it look really, really easy.
I agree. One more thing I was just thinking about real quick, back to Connor. You know how earlier we were talking about, you know, the independent contractor thing? Technically, that's how their employment is defined with the UFC as far as the fighters go. And you've got Jon Jones, you know, next weekend – under contract, big name fighter doing a grappling match. Is that like okayed in the contract, or do you think UFC has to sign off on it? And if it is okayed in Jones's contract, is boxing different from MMA where a fighter could box? Like, it's a weird thing where it doesn't seem clear, because sometimes they don't let like Tom Lawler work as a manager in Ring of Honor. And then they're going to let Jon Jones grapple against Dan Henderson.
Yeah, it's weird. I would imagine that they have the right to refuse anybody if they're getting paid.
Okay.
Yeah, we've seen guys like Ben Henderson who's competing in Abu Dhabi, and there's no money involved. There may be a prize, but I know he's done a lot of you know, just regular jiu-jitsu tournaments where there's no prize money.
Right.
So he's technically an amateur. I think the UFC can prohibit that in the same way that, like, all sports teams can prohibit their athletes from doing dangerous activities, like riding motorcycles and stuff. They don't seem to be concerned about that. See Donald Cerrone. But I'm sure, you know, I don't think that they can go to the guys can't go to WWE without permission. So when they're doing these grappling tournaments and things like that, I'm sure the UFC is aware of it and has stated their position. And my guess is that they are okay with it because if they weren't, Chael would have said something. He ain't going to keep his mouth shut. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, they let Bisping do it with Sonnen too on that card. Can't remember when it was, 6 months ago.
Yeah,
but it seems like they're okay with the grappling, the jiu-jitsu stuff, but anything with striking or where there could be, you know, like a concussion, that sort of thing, they seem to not, like pro wrestling, they won't let you pro wrestle for the most part. I don't think Barnett's wrestled at all since he's been in the UFC. I could be wrong on that, but seems like they shy away from, you know, the real heavy contact, but you can get hurt bad in a jiu-jitsu tournament too. I mean,
yeah, you can, but like Liz Carmouche just competed at the Eddie Bravo Invitational maybe 3 months ago.
Joe Lauzon did one of those too, Metamoris, I think.
Yeah, and the truth is that when it comes to grappling, anybody can get hurt because right. Yeah, they are grabbing your arms and you're gonna try to choke and break your arms and all that shit, but. In truth, you're probably really not in any more danger than you are just rolling in the gym.
Right.
Whereas, you know, boxing, that's boxing. You know, you're getting hit in the head. You're getting the chance of getting cut and beat up and bruised. And maybe most important of all, it's regulated by an athletic commission. So they'll be able to step in there and say no to a subsequent fight. Whereas grappling tournaments have never been regulated, and they really shouldn't be, because that would kill them all. So that's probably a thing. Again, some of it may just come down to, you know, especially Dana White in the past. Are you friendly with him? Does he like you?
You know,
I think Eddie Bravo's the EBI. They're going to get a lot of preferential treatment because Eddie and Joe Rogan are really good friends. And I'm sure that counts for something. And they establish a relationship. Boxing, you know, Dana hates all those boxing promoters. Like, there's no way in shit he's going to let Bob Arum make a dime off of him.
Mm.
So, yeah. I think it's all case-specific, and they do what they want.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting because that part of the issue with all of this stuff is the fact that the fighters don't really have a union or any real representation. Because none of this stuff is really – it doesn't feel like it's really defined, and it's just kind of wishy-wash at whatever the management's discretion is, whether or not you can go do some indie wrestling or you can go to New Japan or if you can grapple for Eddie Bravo or Metamoris or Chael's underground thing. So it seems – it all falls back to that fact that there is no union for the fighters, and none of this stuff has really been formalized or truly declared and written out and is down on paper and is strictly followed. Because you wonder if Conor really pushed it, is there some clause or some legality where he could box if all these other guys are doing this other stuff?
I doubt it. I strongly doubt it. Going to other sports, you see it, it's very routine that they have those clauses. No motorcycles. I mean, the guys all ignore them. That's why so many athletes have like, oh, I fell down the stairs in the middle of winter when I was in Florida, right next to my jet ski. Oops, it just happened, and things like that. But, yeah, I think it would be very fair for any judge to uphold that as a very reasonable restriction on their contract.
All righty. That's all I got.
That's all I've got too.
All right.
All right, everybody. That's a way to just end the show on like a, and cold, we're done.
Cold open, cold closing.
That's how we work, everybody. ABC, always be closing. As Alec Baldwin, of all people, said. Do we know the movie? Anybody? Anybody?
I don't.
Glengarry Glenn Ross.
Oh, jeez.
David Mamet, one of the greatest directors ever. Greatest writers ever.
I feel like I've seen it. Do they wear weird hats in that movie or something?
It's all about salesmen. And like, no, it's really just all about salesmen.
No, I believe you. I like how I determine whether or not I had seen the movie. Do people wear weird hats in it?
I think they kind of.
I don't even know what I'm thinking of. Like Dick Tracy or something. Maybe, I don't even know.
Maybe you're thinking that, was it Men at Work or whatever with Charlie Sheen?
They were garbage men in that. I know that movie.
Yeah, they probably had hats on.
All right.
You don't get garbage on your head. Maybe were you talking to like The Replacements with Keanu Reeves? They wore helmets in that.
I don't know.
Mr. 3000 with what's his face? A late comedian playing Mr. 3000 was Tom Selleck playing ball in Japan. They wore hats there too. Tombstone? They wore cowboy hats in Tombstone.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm thinking of.
That's it, everybody. He's singing Tombstone. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. I will now let Matt say goodbye because I realize that's what we do every week. And why break tradition? So Matt will say goodbye. I will hit hang up. And then I will immediately try to get this shit out because I got to wake up at 5:30 in the morning.
All right. Good night. Thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Aggressively. We all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day.